wrapping up Blind Squirrels and Acorns today on Principles and Policies. Welcome to today's week-ending edition of Principles and Policies. I'm your host, Barry Sheets, the Executive Director of the Institute for Principles and Policy, and along with me today is my co-host, Vice Chairman, fellow analyst, good friend, and all-around great guy, and beleaguered taxpayer, Chuck Mikes.
It's good to have you back at the mic.
Well, it's good to be back, Chuck. I'm feeling quite a bit better than I've had the last few days, and I want to thank everybody out there in our listening audience for their prayers and well wishes, and I appreciate that. And hopefully I can put this behind me, and, well, first of all, I'm praying that none of the rest of my family gets what I had, because it's a mess. But and I'm also praying you don't get it, because honestly, if you go down, we're off the air, because I'm not technically capable of doing all the stuff you do to get these programs recorded and up.
We'll be running best of features, and hopefully people will not think that our best of is a blank CD. As I used to tease my sister about Donny Osmond, we'd go by the blank tape section. This tells you how long ago it was. There were blank cassette tapes, and I say, look, it's Donny Osmond's greatest hits.
Exactly. But anyhow, you know, speaking of blank tapes and greatest hits, that seems to be what we're talking about today in relation to this situation of this report release that candidate Newt Gingrich has put out in relation to reining in the out-of-control federal judiciary. And I love how you tagged this whole discussion this week. Is it a blind squirrel finding an acorn, or someone who actually is finding a principled policy position and moving on it? And I think, Chuck, as we've been going through this week, I think we're now starting to lean heavily toward it's definitely a political position. But the ones who the candidates hoping are blind are the voters.
Well, I'm thinking of the old thing on Sesame Street. One of these things is not like the other. One of these things just isn't the same. and that's what we've got here. We've got one of these things is not like the others. So I'm sorry about subjecting you to even though I toned it down, my singing voice. I was asked to be in the choir, and I said, oh, you really don't want that at church. From an analytical standpoint, this is a puzzle piece that does not fit in the rest of Newt Gingrich's agenda. Newt Gingrich is very much about an executive branch that has the most amount of power. And in fact, what he's arguing for here, as I pointed out a couple of days ago, Mitt Romney's analysis of this. Mitt Romney said, basically, I can't believe that anyone would believe that Congress would have all the power in this situation. And the fact is, as I went over on Wednesday's show, Congress does have all the power in this situation. The only power that the executive branch has in this situation is to say no. And in fact, Newt Gingrich does do that. And that's sort of what he's tacitly promising to do, is to do what, for instance, President Jackson did and say, okay, Chief Justice Marshall has made his decision. Now let's see if he can enforce it. And the answer is that the courts can do their best and send out an army of federal marshals, but the federal marshals are also under the executive branch.
Mm-hmm, so, that's right.
And the executive branch can do all kinds of things to thwart the courts. And in fact, Abraham Lincoln, one of the dangers of going too far the other direction is that Abraham Lincoln did things like issue arrest warrants, which weren't in his purview. He ordered the arrest of the Chief Justice of the United States of America. Now, some people doubt that, but the fact is that has been confirmed through some paperwork of some people who actually received the order to do so and immediately burned it, refused to do so. This was a fellow who was, I believe, a federal marshal or some official of the court who got this order from the executive branch and said, no way, Jose, I'm not playing this game. <Nuh-uh>. This is unconstitutional as anything. And in fact, it was. So this is one of the problems. I think what we would see with a Newt Gingrich with a reined in court, unfortunately, would be an overly active executive branch. I think he wants to give too much power in that direction.
Wait a minute. Aren't we seeing that already in the current administration with the surfeit of executive orders, czars, and other expansive moves toward centralizing power in the executive branch, even to the point of the current occupant saying that he wish he didn't have to deal with Congress?
Oh, I think you'll find that we've had too much of that in the executive branch since about, let's say 1904 or so.
You're probably right.
One of the big heroes. And in fact, what's interesting about this is Newt Gingrich is a huge admirer of Teddy Roosevelt, who was a major progressive. And I think Newt wants to model himself after Teddy Roosevelt as president. And frankly, that was one of the most frightening periods in American because of the way the size and reach and control of government grew under his regime. I'll often hear Republicans talking about the good Roosevelt, and I'm like, which one is that? I would say the ones that did us a favor and didn't run for any executive branch office.
That's probably true. But, you know, what it gets right down to it, I guess, Chuck, is what we're dealing with here is we have an electorate that, by and large, and I'm sure our audience is an exception to this rule, but by and large, haven't read the Constitution, don't understand the way our founders crafted the branches. And honestly, I think the reason why Newt Gingrich is getting so much slack right now, Chuck, honestly, it gets dang, you know, we've heard from, if you've looked at the articles from folks like Michael Mukasey and Alberto Gonzalez, former Solicitor Generals of the United States, with at least with Gonzalez, nominee to the Supreme Court, what you have is Newt's little document here has attacked one of the foundational structures in American politics. And that's that fantasy that our founders left us three co-equal branches exactly. Who all have exactly the same amount of power.
Well, thank you for anticipating the show that I did on Wednesday that you haven't heard yet.
Yeah, I didn't. So, okay, I'm glad you did that already.
I actually talked about it.
I didn't listen to it yet.
It's good that you bring this up because it means we're both thinking on the same frequency. The fact is that what you see is you have two quote-unquote experts who were attached to both branches. They were attached to the executive branch, and they were attached to the judicial branch through their officer of the court status.
That's
now,
right.
What do you suppose Mukasey and Gonzalez are thinking about? They like the fact that they can go into the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court will play a 9-member constitutional convention and alter the Constitution to do what they want it to do, as both Mukasey and Gonzalez did during the Bush administrations with the Patriot Act. Essentially, the Supreme Court has looked the other way and, in fact, ruled on cases like not just the Patriot Act, which basically eliminates the Fourth Amendment, and several others, the 6th, 7th, and 8th, but also the 5th Amendment with private property rights in the Kelo decision, also occurring under the Bush administration. And basically, I think at the time, I'm trying to remember who the attorney general was at the time, but giving it basically, you know, half-hearted arguments against Kelo.
Mm-hmm. Right.
The Justice right. Department. And essentially, you also see two guys who want to keep the possibility of being maybe a federal judge or even a Supreme Court judge intact in some way. So therefore, they don't want to denude a branch of government that someday they might sit on a bench of all the power it has accumulated in the last 150 years. So you can see why these guys would come out with teeth bared and claws out of the sheath. It makes perfect
absolutely.
Sense.
Oh, it does. It does. Well, you know, we've only got a couple of weeks until the Iowa caucuses, and of course here in Ohio, our elected officials have finally landed and decided on having a single primary in 2012 instead of a split one, and it looks like the primary is going to be on the 6th of March, the first Tuesday in March, which is funny, Chuck, because before they started tinkering and messing around with it, guess when the primary was going to be next year?
Well, as I recall, May, yeah, that's
the
right.
6th of March, because that was the original date that if they before, and then they moved it, and it was going to be one was going to be in June, and the other one was going to be in April, and then they were talking about May for consolidation, and finally they got back around to saying, you know what, we really messed this up. Let's go back and make it March the 6th, which they did, which means that all the candidates, including those presidential candidates, which are out there stumping in Iowa and New Hampshire and other places right now, all have to be filed in Ohio by the end of this year, by the end of December, as a matter of fact. Early on, when they thought we were going to have two primaries, there were a handful of the candidates who already filed in the state of Ohio. But we assume that the vast majority of them, the president has already filed to run for re-election in Ohio. And I believe Gingrich and Romney had already filed, maybe Santorum in Ohio. But the other candidates, so we'll see by the end of this month who's going to be on the ballot in Ohio for our voters to look at come March 6th, because in January the 3rd is when the Iowa caucuses happen. And honestly, the part of the reason why Ohio wanted to be in March was because if they were in May, there probably wouldn't be that many candidates left because of people having to, you know, do the calculations and figure out the math and realize that there's no way they could find a path to the nomination and drop out of the race.
And Barry, this is one of the major problems that we're having in our over the last 40 years in our presidential decision making, and that is there's some kind of a goofy idea that we need to have these guys winnowed out by the time the convention comes. We need to be down to one or two candidates. Well, that's just simply nonsense. That's exactly what a convention is for.
I was just about to say that we had this conversation with some fellow activists here not too long ago, and they were stunned to think that, wait a minute, you mean when we vote in a primary, we're not picking the candidate? It's like, well, technically, no. What you're doing is you're helping the party winnow down to one or two people so that when they get to the convention, they don't have to spend a lot of time on ballots to determine who the candidate is. It's already predetermined because of all the work and machinations that the party hierarchies have done during the primary season in key swing states in order to get their guy in the slot so that they can go and just have a coronation instead of a nomination fight.
And that's exactly convention. You coronate a candidate these days. You no longer nominate him. He's already nominated by the time he gets there. And in fact, in back in the 30s, 40s, and 50s, and further back into, you know, there were political conventions that went 155 ballots before they had a clear winner for a presidential candidate.
Jack faced that in what, 1824, was it?
I can't answer.
Because the
party systems were so young at that point. But I think, if I'm not mistaken, Abraham Lincoln did not get nominated for the Republican nomination until the balloting was in the 30s.
Something like that, like 36th or 37th ballot.
And my memory may be very poor on that. But nonetheless, the idea, you know, the reason that when you and I were kids, you basically wiped out television for a week while the conventions were on. A Republican convention would come on. All the networks ran basically about 16 or 18 hours a day. We're all convention
right.
all the time.
I remember growing up. I remember sitting and watching the conventions with my parents in the 70s. You know, yes.
You'd basically turn it on, and it was spectator sport. Now it's so contrived, so orchestrated, so choreographed to make it look exciting, and nobody tunes in. You get what, maybe 2 hours of convention coverage a day, maybe.
And that's only because the networks have to do that in order to maintain their FCC licenses.
And that's it. Unfortunately, what's happened is they've got the party apparatus has been changed so much that the party now controls who the nominees are and basically what's going to be in the platform. But you might see some struggles at a Republican convention over a platform fight. You almost never see that at the Democrats, except unless they want to make it so far hard left that just so unbelievable. You'll get the true radicals in there trying to get their platform items in. Why bother? You've got a really radical president right now, so he'll go beyond the platform no matter what. It's getting Republicans to adhere to the platform that's a real problem. One of the things that's going on here is Newt Gingrich is doing his best to try to gather momentum going into Super Tuesday, which is now where Ohio's election is, because that's where all the candidates are going to end up having to drop out if they don't win. That's a dumb way to do this. The reason that those things should be spread out and people encouraged to stay in for the whole campaign is so we can see these issues winnowed out by a convention of elected delegates. And instead, what we've got is delegates who basically waste a week, go and get drunk and eat and party for a week, pretend like they know they're going to have victory in November, knowing full well that maybe they might not, because we've already picked our one candidate and, you know, somebody else got 25 votes or something. But, you know, it depends on which convention you're talking about. I think the Republicans require somewhere in the 900s for nomination. The Democrats are somewhere in the 1100s. It depends. Every year it changes. That's where we're going with this. It's becoming a coronation rather than a nomination.
Right. And the point is that our form of government, we don't coronate kings. We elect presidents who are supposed to follow the Constitution and stay within their boundaries of Article 2.
Well, we just chewed up all of our available time on that little rant. So, unfortunately, we'll have to cut that off for now, or I know that we'll be discussing something else over the weekend. Join us tomorrow for our weekend show at noon for more principles and policies.